Canto 4, Chapter 2, Daksha curses Lord Shiva, and we've got 11, 12, and 13. 13 is on the board, so I'll just read the first two, and then we'll chant the third one. Text 11. Esha me shishyatam prapto yanme duitu agrahit panim vipragni mukhata saivitriya eva saduvat. He has already accepted himself as my subordinate by marrying my daughter in the presence of fire and brahmanas. He has married my daughter, who is equal to Gayatri, and has pretended to be just like an honest person. Short purport there. Daksha's statement that Lord Shiva pretended to be an honest person means that Shiva was not honest, because in spite of accepting the position of Daksha's son-in-law, he was not respectful to Daksha. Text 12. Grihitva mriga chavaksya panimar katalochana pratyutana vivardhade vachapakrit akrita nochitam. Translation. He has eyes like a monkey's, yet he has married my daughter, whose eyes are just like those of a deer cub. Nevertheless, he did not stand up to receive me, nor did he think it fit to welcome me with sweet words. Text 13. Lupta kriyaya shuchaye manine bina setave anichanapyadam balam shudraye vodsatim gidam. Lupta kriyaya, not observing rules and regulations. Ashuchaye, impure. Manine, proud. Binasetave, having broken all rules of civility. Anichan, not desiring. Api, although. Adam, handed over. Balam, my daughter. Shudraya, unto a Shudra. Eva, as. Ushatim Giram, the message of the Vedas. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. I had no desire to give my daughter to this person who has broken all the rules of civility. Because of his not observing the required rules and regulations, he is impure. But I was obliged to hand over my daughter to him, just as one teaches the messages of the Vedas to a Shudra. Please repeat, I had no desire to give my daughter to this person who has broken all the rules of civility. Because of his not observing the required rules and regulations, he is impure. But I was obliged to hand over my daughter to him, just as one teaches the messages of the Vedas to a Shudra. Purport. A Shudra is forbidden to take lessons from the Veda because a Shudra, due to his unclean habits, is not worthy to hear such instructions. This restriction, that unless one has acquired the Brahminical qualifications, one should not read the Vedic literatures, is like the restriction that a law student should not enter a law college unless he has graduated all lower grades. According to the estimation of Daksha, Shiva was unclean in habits and not worthy to have the hand of his daughter, Sati, who was so enlightened, beautiful, and chaste. The word used in this connection is Bina Setave, which means one who has broken all the regulations for good behavior by not following the Vedic principles. In other words, according to Daksha, the entire transaction of the marriage of his daughter with Shiva was not in order. He has eyes like a monkey's, yet he has married my daughter, whose eyes are just like those of a deer cub. Nevertheless, he did not stand up to receive me, nor did he think it fit to welcome me with sweet words. So, this is the original sin. Matsara. Envy. Prabhupada used to give an example sometimes to illustrate the meaning of envy. Two friends, they were talking. So one of them mentioned another person that they knew, and he said, "Oh, you know so-and-so, he's become a high court judge." So the other one, he said, "What, him? No, no way." He said, "No, I saw it, it's listed there, he's a high court judge." "Oh, well, then he must not be getting any salary." So that's envy, that even if somebody does something meritorious, an envious person can't recognize it. It's a disease of the heart. In the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's mentioned, Dhammo Kaitava, that cheating forms of religion are kicked out from this Puranam, Nirmatsaranam Satam. It's only meant for those who are Nirmatsara, or without any envy, or otherwise translated as being very pure in heart. Those persons can understand the Srimad Bhagavatam because the Bhagavatam is a glorification of someone else. If you're envious, you can't tolerate hearing the glorification of anyone else. You only want to hear the glories of yourself. This is the symptom of envy, and the natural follow-on from envy, it's mentioned there, is pride. Manine, that an envious person is very proud of himself. That's his symptom. He wants always to hear about his own glories, how handsome he is, how learned he is, how qualified he is and expert he is in so many different ways. And he can talk endlessly about his own glories. But if it comes to describing the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to whom he is subordinate, oh, that he cannot tolerate. We see that, the atheists. They're not content just to not believe in God. Yeah. But they have to go out, and they want to propagate their non-belief and convince as many people as possible that the activity of glorifying a figment, an imaginary supreme lord, is foolish and silly, and a sign of madness. And they propagate this everywhere. They write big theses and so many scientific theories, and they make so much propaganda in human society that there's no God. When actually, if there is actually no God, and you really believe there's no God, then why spend so much time decrying him? Why spend so much time talking about something that actually doesn't exist? Then who is foolish? Yeah. So the fact is that people cannot stop talking about God, either positively or negatively. But Krishna is the center of all existence, and all living beings are his eternal servants. They're all eternally subordinate to him. And therefore, the only business of any living being is to glorify him. This is, as Daksha's pointing out here, because he's misapplying it, but he's actually criticizing Lord Shiva for not glorifying and honoring a superior personality, who he thinks he is. And he's establishing a case as to why he is superior to Lord Shiva. And his main argument, of course, is that Lord Shiva is in fact his son-in-law. And everybody knows a son-in-law has to offer respects to his father-in-law. This is natural etiquette. It's the rules of civility. And if you don't do that, then you're at fault. So he's pointing out that Lord Shiva, not only, of course, he's saying that not only is he my son-in-law, but he's not even qualified to be my son-in-law. Yeah, it would be one thing if the man was qualified. Yeah, then I might accept, all right, he's married my daughter, but he's so qualified that even if he sometimes, you know, fails to observe the proper etiquette, I can forgive him for that because he's actually a fit person to be married to my daughter. So he could give that concession, but here he's saying actually no concession can be given because Lord Shiva is just like a monkey. Yeah, he's not regulated in any way whatsoever. The man doesn't follow any regulative principles. He's just totally unqualified to be my son-in-law. And he should realize that if he had any intelligence at all. At least he would accept that he's not fit to be my son-in-law, and that would make him doubly obliged to offer his obeisances and praises to me. But he's not even doing that. So he's building up his list of faults. This is what envious people do. They meet somebody, and immediately they want to measure their quality. They want to see, you know, how this person is compared to me. And they immediately start finding out all the different faults. Even if he has some good qualities, they should be minimized. But actually, he really has no good qualities, and here they are. Here's all the list of reasons why this person is inferior to me. And so that way then, they size you up, and mentally they make a note, you know, all the different faults of this particular person. And then after they've made their list at the right time, when they think it's suitable, then they come streaming out, and they come out with this flow of invective to put this person down and put them in their place. So they wait until the appropriate time. The appropriate time is when that person doesn't show proper respect to me. So Daksha, he married his daughter off to Shiva on the advice of his father. So being, you know, a respectful person himself, well versed in all the rules and regulations of civility, he followed his father's instructions. And he married his daughter to somebody that he didn't particularly regard. And he didn't say anything at the time. But all this time he's been waiting for the opportune moment. He's been listening in his mind and observing Lord Shiva and figuring out all of his so-called faults. And he's been building it up and building it up. And now, just at the right time, when he comes to this Jagya, where all the leading personalities in the whole universe are present, and he is one of the leading personalities, in fact the leading personality practically, the only person that didn't stand up to receive him was his own father, because that would, you know, have been a breach of etiquette. So he forgave his father for not standing up and receiving him nicely. But all the rest of them, they had to stand up and receive him. But Lord Shiva didn't. So it was an insult. He took it. This is a big insult. Just see, in front of everybody, he's disrespecting me. The man's married my daughter. He's clearly my subordinate in every way. And he's not showing me sufficient, you know, due respect. Now, what do I do? I have to correct this. He feels now he has to correct this misimpression created by Lord Shiva. Otherwise, it may catch on. And other people may not stand up to receive me and may not speak sweet words when I come into their presence. And we can't have that. My position will be diminished. So I have to take action now, finally. I can say what this man really is, and I can point out all the faults in his behavior, and then everybody will realize what a rascal he is and how, you know, inferior and subordinate he is to me. then my prestige will be preserved. So this is his moment. This is his golden opportunity to let it all come out. Of course, he's thinking he's putting himself up, or he's keeping himself up, but he doesn't realize that due to his own pride and envy, he has failed to recognize the true qualities of the most exalted person in the universe, Lord Shiva. Shivadam. Of course, Shiva means all auspicious. Shivadam is mentioned also, it's one of the qualities of the devotees, that they're the well-wisher of all other living beings. That's another meaning for Shiva. That everything's auspicious, not just for that person, but for everybody that comes in contact with that person. Shivadam, they're a well-wisher. Just like Srila Prabhupada used to sign all of his letters, "Your ever well-wisher." That is Shivadam. That is the quality of a devotee. That he only thinks about the happiness of others. He never thinks about his own self. He never thinks about, you know, any glorification or any kind of prestige that may be due to himself. He doesn't care for that. He has no interest in it whatsoever. He's simply thinking about how to do good for others. This is nimatsaranam, satam. That when the heart is purged and freed from all selfish desires, at that point you can be an actual well-wisher for others. You can glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead because you can recognize his true position. You're not envious anymore. You're not proud about yourself, but you were humble and submissive. And in that humble state of mind, Kirtaniya Sada Hariyi, you can go on glorifying Krishna eternally. 24 hours means eternally, as they say, 24/7. It never stops. It naturally flows from the heart of a pure devotee, sneha. Sneha means like liquid. This is also another quality of a devotee. It means affection, but a special kind of affection that flows very naturally, just like liquid flows from one place to another. So the affection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is described as sneha. It's simply flowing like a liquid, golden liquid, fragrant liquid, and it flows to his devotees, and the devotees receive that in their hearts and become very joyful and receiving the affection of the Supreme Lord, and their affection naturally flows back to the Supreme Lord. It's reciprocal. And also, their affection flows out to other living beings. So they don't care what their own situation is. They're nicely situated, having received the affection of the Supreme Lord. They have no other requirement. They don't want any praise or any significance in this material world. They are simply interested in the welfare of other living beings. They want to help those who have deprived themselves of that affection of the Supreme Lord by their envy. And they want to help them to remove that envy, to remove that pride that they have within their hearts that's blocking them from seeing the truth of their situation, their real position. The real truth, as it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, this is the truth as distinguished from illusion. And it can be understood by those who are pure in heart, not otherwise. So what is the truth? The truth is that there is a Supreme Lord and all others are his servants. That's all. It's a very simple truth, but it's very meaningful. It gives all good fortune to any living being just to recognize that one simple truth. But if one cannot recognize it, then his position is that he falls away. Yeah, if we are in the presence of an exalted person, but we don't offer them proper respect, what will be the result? We fall down. We're pushed away. We're removed from their presence. Yeah, nobody lives with somebody who's envious. In a similar way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although his affection is always flowing. But living beings who cannot receive it, who are envious of him, who don't like to see him worshipped and praised and served, those living beings, they cannot tolerate being in his presence. And so Krishna is obliged, all right, give them some other place where they can forget him, where they can be cut off from him. And being cut off, then misery begins. That's the biggest beginning of all the problems of life. Yeah, separation from Krishna, being cut off from Krishna, and being in ignorance of who we really are and our original, natural, affectionate relationship with the Supreme Lord. So every living being in this material world is in that situation. They're away from the Lord. They're cut off from him. And it's only because of their own mentality that that has occurred. That's all. Yeah. They don't like to worship the Lord. They want to be worshipped themselves. Okay. And then they come to this material world. And then they meet a lot of other individuals who are in exactly the same position. And therefore, there's competition. One, you know, to put everybody else down and to put myself up. But because the capability is not there, it cannot be sustained. Just like we see in, you know, ordinary life. Sometimes a person becomes very prominent. Yeah, they get some name and fame, they get some money or position. But they can't sustain it because it's not natural. We ordinary living beings are not Bhagavan. Yeah, they're Bhagavan Das. But if they try to be Bhagavan, if they try to accumulate the opulences of this Supreme Lord, they can't hold it. They can't sustain it. It's not natural to do so. They lose it after some very short period of time. So you see somebody becomes, you know, a big political leader. And for some time, you know, they rule over some country. But inevitably, somebody else will come along at a certain point and they'll be removed. They'll be superseded, that's all. We see that all the time. There's so much competition. Yeah, all the politicians, they have their allies. They all work together to get this man on top. And then as soon as he's on top, the guy right next to him, his right-hand man or his left-hand man, is already trying to figure out how to get rid of him so I can occupy the post. So in that way you have these systems, democracy. It's a system of envy, that's all. Because the whole system is how to knock that man down and put myself up. Yeah? And advertise myself, how glorious I am, how qualified I am, how I am meant to be the leader of all the peoples. You have to do that if you want to make progress in the political field, especially in the democratic field. You have to advertise yourself. You have to have this huge ego and pride in who you are and what you think you are. And you know, you have to convince other people, you know, that you can do so many things. But you can't. The capability is lacking. And therefore they have to tell so many lies. And then so many lies being told, it becomes an all entanglement. And eventually, boom, you get thrown back down again. This is the material world. Nobody can sustain this artificial idea of being the center of all attraction. Krishna is the only all-attractive personality. All other living beings are subordinate to him. And when we have an open heart and we recognize things as they are, then we become happy. That's our real happiness. That's our real satisfaction. But if we're not open-hearted, if within our heart we're harboring, you know, so many desires for ourselves, so much selfish motivation, then what happens is that the more we become bound up in our own selfishness, the lower we go. The further away we go from Krishna, and the lower we go, even in this material world. So you see that people, they get after some time out of envy of other living beings, just like the man who becomes a big leader in his country. But to sustain that position, he has to fend off all his so-called enemies. He has to see everybody in terms of being either a friend or an enemy. And what's the criteria for making that judgment and giving that, you know, label, this is a friend, this is an enemy? Just simply whether it serves my purpose or not. If this person serves my purpose, he's a friend. If this person doesn't serve my purpose, he's an enemy. And what do I have to do with my enemies? I have to put them down. I have to destroy them, because otherwise they'll destroy me. This is the competition. And so getting into that position, he has to do so many abominable things in order to keep himself in the high position. Yeah, war. You know, they have to manipulate the population in so many different ways. They have to have big armies that they send out just to control all the different resources that are necessary for me to provide to the people that are going to vote for me in the next election and keep me up. I can kill thousands of people without a second thought. Yeah, send over the bombers, send over the, you know, unmanned drones, you know, fire rockets into innocent civilians, blow them all sky high. For what? So I can be the president for 4 years, or another 4 years, 8 years. And then after your 8 years are up, you're finished anyway. Nobody cares for you. And you're thrown down anyway. But in the meantime, you have to do so many abominable things. Yeah, so much damage to other living beings. All in the names of friends and enemies and false prestige. And then what happens is that you have to get the reactions to all the things that you've done. That they don't know, because they don't recognize that there is a supreme controller. Thinking themselves to be the supreme, they think that they can do anything they like. They can, you know, do any abominable action against any living being, and it's justified. Somehow or another, they rationalize it all. No, we had to do that. It's unfortunate, but what can be done? But what they don't realize is that there's a reaction. If you do harm to any other living being, yeah, in any way, it comes back to you. Yeah, it's foolishness to think that you can kill so many other living beings. What to speak about the politicians, anybody, everybody's doing that in the material world. Let's take the meat eaters. Yeah. They kill billions of other living beings. Why? Just so they can enjoy their tongue. That's all. But they don't think that here is another living being. He's the same as me. He's embodied for some time. He's struggling in this material world. Now how to help him? How to give him happiness? No. They want to exploit other living beings. Oh, he's here. He's less than me. Good. Cut his throat. Skin him. Yeah, cook him and eat him. This is not Nimat Saranam. Yeah, this is not Shivadam, being a well-wisher of other living beings. So this is the material world. This is what's going on one level or another. And we see, because in the lower levels, how prevalent that competitive spirit is, that envy against all other living beings, how prevalent that is. The more stronger it becomes, the lower down you go, and you see in the lower species of life, life is just one constant battle, one fight after another. One is a predator, another is the prey. The one that is the prey for the predator, he's also a predator for another living being. So in that way, you know, there's the feeding order, the food chain. Jivo Jivasya Jivanam, one living being is food for another living being, and everybody's fighting it out. Yeah, because they're all envious of each other. But we see envy is so powerful, it's such a subtle pollution of the heart, that even in the highest levels in the universe it still becomes manifest. Daksha, Daka means very expert. He was the leading son of Lord Brahma. How expert can you be to become the son of, you know, the original person in the universe. So Dukkha, he was very expert, but still he allowed this pollution of envy to enter into his heart. So that's an indication to us how wary we have to become of envy. It's there within our hearts. We shouldn't doubt it. That's why we're here right now in these material bodies, in this material world, because we're envious. And now we have to free ourselves, yeah, from everything that separates us from that affectionate relationship that we ought to be having with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So how do we do that? It's by service. By performance of devotional service, we learn how to be non-envious. We learn how to do things for the welfare of others. If you see the descriptions of the different levels of devotees, third class, second class, first class. So, in the third class, no preaching. It's still very self-centered. There's some desire to be a devotee. There's some recognition of the Supreme Lord. Yeah, at least we've given up that much envy. We're not atheists anymore. But we haven't yet got to the point where we feel so non-envious against other living beings that we're willing to sacrifice our own existence, our own activities, our thinking, feeling, and willing for their welfare. We're only interested in our welfare. As long as I'm okay, I'm chanting, I'm taking my prasadam, I'm living in the Dham, you know, I'm okay. Thank you very much. Krishna's the supreme, I'm his servant. Bas. This is, therefore, Prabhupada said that the third class devotee, they're still, the hallmark is still envy. They're invariably envious against other devotees. This is when you're in that transition stage from being, you know, an envious conditioned soul and moving back towards Krishna and coming towards this position of nimatsaram, or non-envious. So there's a transitory period, and that's the third class platform. So one should not remain as a third class devotee. Yeah, it's not safe, because at any moment that envy can come up, just like Daksha. Daksha is undoubtedly a devotee of the Supreme Lord. You can't have that position in the universe that he had as a progenitor, you know, of many living species without actually being a servant of the Supreme Lord. You don't get that empowerment. It's not natural and inherent within the ordinary living being. That ability is given, and that ability is given on the basis of one's receptivity to, you know, to receive it and to utilize it properly. So Daksha was undoubtedly an elevated person. The demigods are undoubtedly elevated persons. The lord of all the demigods is Indra. But there are so many stories of Indra, how he becomes envious against some sage, you know, some personality that's doing austerities and penances. And he thinks, now if this person becomes really purified and powerful and pure, he'll take my post. So even he feels insecure, defensive, envious. He gets envious against other living beings, that he's in competition with me. This is the symptom of envy. So all the way up through the universe, this envy is there. It's such a difficult disease to get rid of. But the way that we do that is by the performance of devotional service. Yeah, Krishna says, Manmana Bhava Madbhaktam Madjaji Mam Namaskaru. Namaskaru, you offer your obeisances, Prabhupada said. You offer your obeisances to the Lord or his devotees, you become 50% advanced. What is that advancement? It means you're getting rid of that envious mentality, that competitive spirit, that this person is in my friend or my enemy. A devotee doesn't think like that. When Prahlad Maharaj was educated at his school, that was what he was taught. Because he had to become the successor to his father. So in order to become, you know, the most powerful person at that time in the universe, then he had to learn how to distinguish who's his friends and who's his enemies. This was the teaching that he got at school. That if you want to maintain yourself in this powerful position that I've created, Hiranyakashipu, I've created, now you're going to inherit this as my son. So now I'm going to teach you how to recognize who are your friends and who are your enemies and how to deal with them all. So after some time, when he was being educated, then he was called to his father and he asked him, well, how are you doing? What are you learning at school? This is natural. Parents, they always want to know how well their children are progressing. How much are they learning? You know, how much have they understood in their studies? So how are you doing? What are they teaching you at school? So, you know, Prahlad immediately began to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Hiranyakashipu was astounded. What's going on here? You're supposed to be seeing me as the Supreme in the universe, and you're glorifying Vishnu. What's going on? Who's been teaching it? Who's been poisoning my son, you know, with this mentality? And Prahlad Maharaj said, I'm sorry, but I just can't see anybody as a friend or an enemy. Every living being is a part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. I'm his servant. All others are his servants. And I have to help all others to become the servants of the Supreme Lord. That was his mentality, but his father was exactly the opposite. So this is, you know, the devotional mood. He cannot see people in terms of friends and enemies. He doesn't make this list, a hit list. All right, this one, he's got this fault and this fault and this fault. And then he waits for the opportunity. All right, now let it fly. Put him down. Show him who's superior. Yeah. Show him, I'm a big devotee. You're a nonsense junior. You know. Now, this is not the mentality of a devotee. So how do we develop the real mentality of a devotee? It's Shivadam. Shiva. Lord Shiva is Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. He is the best of all the devotees. He is the best of all the devotees. Why? Because he can actually pick up the lowest of all living beings in the universe. Yeah, Bhutanath. He's the Lord of even, you know, the most rejected, fallen, envious, you know, spiteful creatures in the universe. They're so envious they don't even get bodies. They become ghosts and hobgoblins and these like this. And their only business is causing mischief for all others. But Lord Shiva is so generous. He's such a well-wisher of all living beings. He accepts them into his entourage. They are allowed to associate with him so that they'll become gradually elevated. By worshipping him, they'll be gradually purified and then gradually they'll become normal living beings again. Yeah. So this is Lord Shiva. He's the well-wisher of all living beings. He is the best of all the devotees. So this is the example that we have to follow. We have to see how a devotee is acting. How to be a devotee? It means that one has to extend himself. One has to give up the selfish mentality. And at least, Prabhupada said, come to this second-class platform. The second class platform is the preaching platform. It's where we get over that envious third class stage. We stop worrying about ourselves. We stop envying others. And we start worrying about others. We start seeing how other living beings are suffering due to their disconnection from Krishna. And we want to help them to get reconnected, knowing that that will give them all the happiness in their lives. So a devotee on the second class platform is not just content to have, you know, the restoration of his relationship with Krishna for himself, but he wants it for all others. So he goes out, he makes an endeavor to go out and do something for others. Para upakar. This is Lord Chaitanya's movement. It is para upakar. We have to do some good for others. That is the symptom of a non-envious person. That he can actually go out and do anything at any cost for the benefit of another living being. Just like Maharaj Yudhisthira, Ajata Shatru. He was a person with no enemies. He was a king, but he had no enemies. Yeah, Ajata Shatru means he didn't see anybody as his enemy. Even when he'd given up being a king, because they went to the Himalayas to leave their bodies, his brothers fell, his wife fell. The only one living being that managed to stick it out all the way with Yudhisthira was this small dog. Yeah, a dog. Because dogs are not considered to be very elevated personalities. A dog's body is quite a low birth. Prabhupada told me that there's nothing lower than a dog. So Yudhisthira was, going on his journey, his final journey, and he was, followed by this dog. Even his brothers and his wife couldn't follow him, but the dog did. And then at the end, finally, when the chariot came down from the heavenly planets and he was invited, now you're qualified, you can come in the same body. Yeah, you don't even have to change your body. You come to the heavenly planets. He was so exalted a personality. So he got on and, the dog was going to follow him. And then he was, oh, sorry, no dogs. There's a sign on the chariot, no dogs allowed. You can't bring a dog. Dogs are not qualified to enter into heaven. So he was so munificent, such a well-wisher, that he said, if the dog doesn't go, I don't go. I said, why? Why are you thinking like this? Because this living being has taken shelter in me. And if I abandon him, then who else will I abandon? So I cannot give up this living being. He's my surrendered, he's a surrendered soul to me. I have to give him shelter. So if you want me to go to heaven, you have to let him come with me. Because it was a test, then it turned out that it was his father actually in disguise. But that is the quality of a devotee that is willing to extend himself for the benefit of others. Yeah, no friends, no enemies, but he's a sincere well-wisher of all living beings. And therefore we see that is the particular hallmark of Lord Chaitanya's movement. Yeah, Namo Mahavadanyaya. That he is, the most munificent, well-wishing appearance of the Lord. Because it's all about preaching. It's all about going out, sacrificing your own, position, your own activities, your own thinking and feeling and willing, just for the benefit of others. That is Lord Chaitanya's real movement. Yeah, because, chanting and dancing and taking prasadam, all these things are there. But giving it all to others, that's the real nectar. That's where the real, manifestation of devotional service comes in. And therefore, Prabhupada, he mentioned that Rameshwara one time, he gave a class in which he said that the activities of the book distributors in going out on the streets and selling Prabhupada's books, this is directly the activities of the gopis. This can be compared directly with the position of the gopis. So some of the devotees, they were a little doubtful, and they wrote to Srila Prabhupada, Rameshwara has been saying such, what is your opinion? And Prabhupada said, yes. He said, Rameshwara has actually understood this philosophy. This is the mood of Srimati Radharani. Yeah, not that she's hankering to serve Krishna herself, but she's always looking to introduce other devotees to Krishna. And she gets more delight from seeing their service to Krishna than she gets from doing her own service to Krishna. This is the topmost mood. And that was Lord Chaitanya's mood. Yeah, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nayanya. He's Radha and Krishna combined. Yeah, so he has that mood of Srimati Radharani. What is that mood? To glorify Krishna, but to engage all others in the glorification of Krishna. So this is Nimatsaranam. Yeah? And if anybody, because everybody can recognize the good qualities of a devotee. Prabhupada said that. If you just become purified yourself, don't worry about whether other people will accept or not. Yeah, just the description of the six Goswamis, dear Adira, Priyo, yeah, that to the pious people and the Adira, the, you know, the ruffians, the crooked people, Priya, the six Goswamis, they're all dear, both to the good people and the ruffians. Why? Nimatsaro. Because their hearts are pure. They're not envious. So even a crooked person, they can understand a saintly person in human society. They know this person is not against me. You know, he's honest. He's fair-minded. He has no envy of me. So wherever the six Goswamis went, they were regularly consulted, you know, by all the different villagers. They would come. And they would give some time to them, actually. Yeah, it's not that, you know, they were just simply writing. But they would give time also to the people in the area of Vrindavan. And any problems that they had, fighting, you know, difficulties, disagreements, they knew, all right, we can't resolve it, but if we go to Sanatan Goswami or Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, they will say what is the actual solution to our problem, and we'll accept it. And they did. So this is the position of a devotee, very, very exalted. It's not an easy thing to be freed from envy in this world. And then all the concomitant, you know, bad qualities that develop from an envious mentality. Greed, lust, anger, you know, illusion. All these qualities, they all come from this one original sin, yeah, of Matsara. So here we see the original sin in action, even in the highest levels of the universe. So we have to be very careful. We have to be very humble, yeah, Trinada Pisuni Chena, and just try to serve other living beings as best we can, give them Krishna consciousness, and then automatically our own position is secure. We get elevated back into the association of the non-envious Krishna and his devotees in the spiritual world. So we have a question. All right, we're going to ask some answer some questions. This one is from Jivan Gaura Haridas. In Chennai, at what stage of devotional service is envy completely wiped out? This is a good question. At what stage is envy completely wiped out? This, a similar kind of question was asked to Srila Prabhupada in 1974 in a lecture that he gave in Melbourne. He had been saying how it's so essential to be humble in one's dealings, you know, as a devotee, if we want to make advancement in devotional service. So there was one devotee, he was initiated, but he was having troubles. He had moved out of the temple. He was very critical of the devotees in the temple. And he had come to the lecture, so at the end of it, he asked Srila Prabhupada, how do you become humble? And Prabhupada's reply was, that is up to you. That is up to you. So if you want to know when your envy ends, that is up to you. You have to give it up. That's the whole point. There's a process that we can go through for purifying the heart, but if we never give up, voluntarily give up our envy, then you can chant the Hare Krishna mantra for millions of lifetimes and you'll still stay in the material world. Yeah. What's that? Bahunam Janmanamante. What's that? Shravana Kirtana. Pari Premadana. You can chant the Hare Krishna mantra for many, many lifetimes. But if you don't avoid the 10 offenses, then you'll stay in the material world. So there's 10 offenses, and those 10 offenses are things that have to be, you have to voluntarily recognize in yourself and give up. The anattas are there within the heart. They're there because we want them to be there. We want them to be there. That's the problem. We want to be in this material world. We came here because we wanted to come here. We didn't want to be with Krishna. We wanted to be, you know, by ourselves or in competition with Krishna. So how do we give that up? It's not a mechanical process. Yeah, it's a voluntary thing. Devotional service is voluntary. Prabhupada used to stress that so many times that in ISKCON, these boys and girls, he would say, they have voluntarily given their love to me. Yeah. So how can we deal with them roughly? Yeah. Or order them? No, we have to deal them with them in all due respect because the whole process is a voluntary process. So at what stage you want to give up your envy, it's the moment that you give it up. That's all. At what stage does envy disappear? It disappears the moment that you give it up. You just let it go. And you don't allow it back. Yeah. That's the process of purification. To get to a point where you can recognize, I was just reading a letter from Maitreya Rishi Prabhu in 1974 to Srila Prabhupada. So he was describing himself that I'm just a complete fool and rascal, I can't do any good for you, like this. And so Prabhupada said, yes, he said, that's very good that you have described yourself as a fool. Now I can understand that you are becoming a little intelligent. Yeah, because when you can recognize that, yes, I'm a fool, now your intelligence is being awoken and you're making some advancement. So this is our position. We have to give these things up. Maharaj Yayati, yeah, he was so lusty that he was prepared to have his son, youngest son, accept his own old age. Yeah, and now, you know, of course, when you get to be old, you really realize what that means. We're not old yet, but we're getting on the verge. You know, when you're old and nothing works, your eyesight's failing and you can't hear anything, you have to keep telling everybody to repeat it twice or three times. That's when you know you need a hearing aid, as my wife will tell you. You know, and so many aches and pains, all your joints, you know, stop working and your bones start to crumble and your organs stop functioning, you don't digest, blah, blah, blah. Everything starts breaking down. So it's a horrible, you know, period of life for somebody that wants to enjoy this material world. And young people, of course, when you have this, you know, fit, healthy body, it's growing, you know, the energy is increasing. Yeah, you know, you want to get out there and enjoy. So to ask a young man, right, to accept your old age so that you can have his youth. How selfish is that? Yeah. How shameless, you know, is a father that would ask his own son to do that? But he did it. And then off he went. And he enjoyed and he enjoyed and he enjoyed and he enjoyed. And then finally, after thousands of years, he finally got to the point where he understood, this is not enjoyment. I'm just chewing the chewed here. Everything that I've tried, you know, to be happy, and I end up in the same position. I'm still not content. I'm still hankering for more. And this is endless. I've had every combination, every facet of material life and enjoyment. You know, he could go to other planets and travel all over the universe. And still, I'm not happy. So then he became a little intelligent, and he just gave it up. The lust that was in his heart, that was impelling him, that burning fever that was impelling him, it's described, Jvara, Matsara Jvara. The burning fever of envy and lust is the natural, you know, concomitant factor with that. That's a burning fever, so he just gave it up. And then he returned the youth to his son, took back his old age, and then perfected his life and went back home, back to Godhead. But, you know, he had to just give it up. He had to voluntarily give it up. And that's the whole point about devotional service. We have to give up, you know, all our anattas, one by one, as they become apparent to us within our hearts. We have to recognize them, and then we have to give them up. And if we struggle as devotees, it's because we're not willing to give up that envious, lusty mentality. We want to hang on to it. We still want our little bit of enjoyment. I still want to get something from this body. You know, a bit of prestige, a bit of, you know, agitation of the senses. Yeah. Somehow or another, we're hanging on to it. So if we do that, then we'll continue on, lifetime after lifetime, universe after universe. And we'll remain here. But if we want to go back home, back to Godhead, we have to give up all our selfishness and our envy of Krishna. So envy goes when we give it up. That's all. Finish. And then we can progress. Any other questions? Yes, Prabhu.
What is first class devotee? You explained about second class and third class. What is first class devotee?
What does...
First class devotee.
First class. Yeah, the first class devotee means that he's so elevated, he makes no distinctions whatsoever between different classes of living beings. On the second class platform, there's still some distinctions. There's no distinction between friend and enemy as such, but there's a distinction between the envious and the innocent. And he deals accordingly. A second-class devotee, he recognizes the Supreme Lord, he worships him. He recognizes the devotees of the Lord, and he only wants their association. Yeah, he feels happy in their association, he feels encouraged in his own service. So in that way, he feels sustained in his devotional life, so he cannot think of being out of the association of other devotees. But he also sees that, you know, amongst all the living beings in the universe, there's a class of non-devotees, those who are not worshipping the Supreme Lord or don't recognize him. But out of those, many of them, it's just due to ignorance. They're innocent. They don't know. They've forgotten. And they just, you know, they have no real opinion this way or that way. You know, they're just working in ignorance, living their lives, and not really doing anything with them. So those persons, they can be approached, and if they're given a chance, then they may actually revive their, you know, their consciousness, Krishna consciousness. They may accept it. Oh, thank you very much. They're very happy to receive it. So the second class preacher, second class devotee, he goes out and he tries to find out, yeah, his position is secure, but he tries to find out the innocent persons who are suffering unnecessarily, and he tries to elevate them. But in the course of doing that, there's another class who are just simply envious. And even if you try to do good to them, not only are they not grateful, you know, for the attempt, but they hate you for it. And they'll try to do so many things to prevent you, you know, from extending the mercy to the innocent people. They'll try to create obstacles for you in your path. And therefore, a devotee on the second class platform, he avoids such persons. Not that he's envious of them, but he has to avoid them so that he can keep on giving the mercy to the innocent. There's this story just like Lord Jesus. So he instructed his disciples, you go out and you spread God consciousness to all the different cities. And don't be upset if people, you know, become offended or they attack you even. If they throw you out of the city walls, because in those days every city had a wall around it. So if they throw you out the city walls, pick yourself up, dust, you know, blow off the dust from that place and go to the next one and keep on preaching. So that's a nice mood. Yeah, and we see also in Lord Chaitanya's associates, Haridas Thakur, even though he was beaten, you know, to the point of death, he didn't have any envy or, you know, enmity towards the people that were doing it. Yeah, so much so that even they became afraid that we're beating this man and, you know, he's not complaining. You know, they got worried, actually, the jailers. They were beating him. And they started getting worried that this person is really, you know, a different category of man. And we're beating him up and he's not even protesting. So they got very afraid, because they were also afraid that, you know, the Qazi would punish them if they didn't actually kill him. But still, you know, they could appreciate Haridas Thakur's position. So this is, you know, the second class platform, and Prabhupada said that even a first class devotee who makes no distinctions, he just simply sees every living being, you know, as part and parcel of the Supreme. He sees all the movements of the living beings as under the control of the Supreme. You know, he sees everything as being, you know, Krishna's arrangement. So he's not, you know, disturbed by any of that. But in order to extend some mercy to those who have forgotten, he comes down to the second class platform and acts as if he's a second class devotee, and then makes these distinctions. Not for himself, not for his own benefit, but for the benefit of the conditioned souls. He teaches them how to distinguish. Here's the Lord, here's the devotees, here's the innocent, here are those to be avoided. So you can either come up to that platform, as we are doing, or attempting to do, hopefully, or you can come down to that platform. Yeah, but of course in the spiritual world, everybody's a first class devotee, and there's just enjoyment and leela. You know, these other distinctions, preaching, there's no preaching in the spiritual world. If you want to preach, you have to come to the material universe. There's glorification of Krishna, that's a different thing. But what we mean by preaching and extending that mercy and elevating a person, that is an activity that's done in the material world. Okay, last question.
I see an apparent contradiction, the idea that the first class needs to come down to the Madhyam platform to preach. And on the other hand, the gopis who are more than first class, we are told that it is their mood to preach, it is their mood to share. So how do we understand that?
Let me see if I got that correct. Say that again, yeah, try and rephrase that.
If the pure devotee needs to come down to the second platform in order to preach,
yes.
How do we understand that preaching is in the mood of the gopis who are the topmost first class devotees?
Okay, yes. How do we understand that preaching is in the mood of the gopis who are on the first class topmost platform if in order to do preaching work you have to come down to the second class platform? It's in the same way that we understand that Krishna exists simultaneously in the spiritual world and the material world. Why does Krishna advent in various incarnations in the material world? It's not that he loses his position, but many of the incarnations are the forms of the Lord that he manifests in the material world and not manifests in the spiritual world. They're not there in the spiritual world, but he's still Krishna. It's the same Krishna. there's a function. Yeah. So for functionality, the exalted devotees of the Lord may come down from the spiritual world. They have the mood of pure devotional service in various ways. But in this material world, they come for a particular function. That function is to elevate those who are not on the platform of pure devotional service. And so there has to be a particular modus operandi that you have to adopt in order to, you know, get that effect of elevating, you know, the conditioned souls. It doesn't affect the pure devotee himself, but he adopts a particular, you know, way of doing things, if you like, in order to affect, you know, preaching activity. So, you know, when the Lord comes in his different incarnations, he's preaching, basically. That's what's happening. You know, all the different incarnations. Why is Krishna appearing in the material world? He's preaching. One way or another, he's reminding the conditioned souls that are there that here I am, you know, the Supreme Lord, your eternally affectionate Lord and Master. You've forgotten me. Here I am. I'm appearing now in so many different ways just to let you know and remind you. It's preaching. Yada yadahi dharmasya glane bharati bharata. If you, you know, the dharma, ultimate dharma is pure devotional service. So if the dharma is lost, then Krishna has to re-establish that. That's why he reappears. So when he comes, he's in a preaching mood. And Lord Chaitanya is especially, you know, the emblem of that. But it doesn't mean that because he's preaching that now he's not, you know, in the mood of the gopis, or he's not, you know, Krishna himself. It's just due to time, place and circumstance. Because in the spiritual world there is no time, place or circumstance. Everything is just flowing. In the material world we talk about, you know, time, place and circumstance, because they're always changing. But in the spiritual world you don't talk about time or space even, because it's eternal and it's unlimited. It's very difficult for us to understand, but that's the situation. There is simply the flow of affection between Krishna and his devotees, that's all. But in the material world there's a particular time, place and circumstance, and Krishna appears in a form, a spiritual form, but a form which is just suitable for that time, place and circumstance. Does that answer your question?
Well, maybe to some extent. Radharani is wanting to share, seems to suppose that she's making distinctions somewhere. And
that she's making?
She has to make distinctions somewhere, who is worthy or not worthy to get how much of Krishna's association. She has to make so many such considerations.
Vasudev's asking that it seems like Radharani has to make distinctions about who she introduces to Krishna for performing devotional service. The answer to that is no, she doesn't. Everybody in the spiritual world, you know, is fit for service to Krishna, but they render different kinds of service to Krishna. And Radharani wants to see all the varieties of service being rendered. It's not that she thinks that because I'm a gopi, only my gopi friends should be with Krishna. No. The cows should be with Krishna. The peacock should be with Krishna. Mother Jashoda should be with Krishna. She assists Mother Jashoda in cooking for Krishna. Radharani is the topmost devotee. There's no question of it. But she's assisting so many other devotees to worship Krishna. She doesn't make a distinction in that sense that this one's fit or unfit. No, everybody is fit. And therefore you'll see that Lord Chaitanya, in the same mood, yeah, what does it say in the Chaitanya Charitamrita? That Lord Chaitanya didn't make any distinction between who was fit and who was unfit to receive this message, you know, and the boon of devotional service. He simply distributed it liberally to everyone without making any distinction.
No, this I can get. Just like the book distributor does not make any distinction. He tries to give out the mercy to everyone and anyone.
Yes.
So in that sense, I can see how he's not making distinctions. But then, what about the necessity of making distinctions in order to preach?
A book distributor is not making distinctions because he's giving out the mercy to anyone and everybody that will accept it. And he's prepared to even to go into places where there may even be hostiles, as we say, people that would try to prevent him. But he tries to, you know, give the mercy out. So, yeah, that's Radharani's mood, and that's, you know, what Rameshwara was describing as the true mood of Sankirtan Jagya. Now, what was the second thing that you said?
But there is this instruction not to preach to the faithless, which
yes, so then there's the instruction not to preach to the faithless. So, that sometimes is applied and sometimes not. The mood, you know, Prabhupada said that sometimes the devotees are even more merciful than the Lord himself. Because in Bhagavad Gita it says that, you know, this message may not be relayed to those, you know, who are unfit or unqualified. But Prabhupada mentions in the purport there that the devotees, understanding the mood of the Lord, become more merciful than the Lord himself. And sometimes, therefore, they try to preach to people that are even unfit, by any standard, you know, to be preached to.
And they take the risk. They're willing to take the risk to go to hell or whatever.
Yes, they're willing to take any risk just to save one soul. So that's, you know, that's the real mood. All right, last question.